The Thinking Long and Short podcast is brought to you by True North Market Research. Subscribe to True North Market Research's newsletter for just $10 a month to get daily market coverage, detailed investment analysis, and trading thoughts to help you navigate market volatility. Your portfolio is not something you should leave to the mercy of the markets, so subscribe today at truenorthmarketresearch.substack.com to get the daily newsletter with daily detailed briefings on financial market action and the investment world. Today, the Federal Reserve held its FOMC Open Market Committee meeting and decided to raise rates by 75 basis points to get the Fed funds rate to 1.5% and 1.75%. Now, leading up to the Fed rate decision, the markets were trading quietly. Everyone was waiting the well-anticipated interest rate decision. And after we got the initial decision, markets sold off heavily. Stocks took a dive. And this is because up until 2 days ago, the markets were anticipating that the Federal Reserve was only going to raise by 50 basis points, as indicated by Jerome Powell in the last press conference for the Federal Reserve. But as was floated in a Wall Street Journal article yesterday, it was indicated that there were rumors going around that the Federal Reserve, after the release of Friday's May CPI data, was much further behind the inflation curve than they thought, and that it was intended that they were going to raise rates by 75 basis points today. And so they did follow through on that. Again, the markets initially sold off. The NASDAQ tanked when the interest rate decision came out, as well as gold and oil. Gold immediately sold off from about $1,820 to about $1,805 an ounce. Again, the NASDAQ went down several hundred points. So did the S&P and the Dow Jones. And oil was also down about 3% on the lows of the day. Now, when the actual press conference happened 30 minutes after the release of the rate hike decision, Powell came off as much more dovish in his statements and his comments to questions that he got after his statement. And so the markets rallied on that. We saw a slight recovery in oil, although oil didn't manage to get back to where it was trading at prior to today's open. And stocks also saw a nice relief rally. You had the NASDAQ finished the day up 2.5%. S&P 500 finished the day up 1.5%. And the Dow Jones finished the day up 1% as well. Gold also rallied back. We ended the day at $1,834 an ounce. And the dollar actually weakened a bit. And the dollar index sold off from 105 to about 104 spot 50. Now, there is some relief now because, again, now we only have some economic data coming out for the next couple weeks. We did get some other economic data this morning, which I'll go over in a bit. But now that we don't have a lot of economic data coming out in the next couple weeks, and the next Fed's rate decision is not for another month and a half, there's not a lot the market can get nervous about now. And so I think we're going to start to see a relief rally here over the next few days. I do expect the markets will be up either tomorrow or the next day, but who knows? But the markets are so beaten up here that it would you would stand to reason that the markets would rally now that they understand the expectation from the Federal Reserve. Now, I want to get into some of Powell's comments in his press conference because that's much more important than the rate hike decision. Because the rate hike decision, again, is highly anticipated. The market started pricing in a 75 basis point rate increase yesterday after the release of the Wall Street Journal article that the Fed was going to be raising by 75 basis points instead of 50. But Powell mentioned that the Federal Reserve still views the economy as being very strong and it's in great shape, but that the Fed will continue to remain data dependent. Now, he mentioned one of the reasons that they raised rates by 75 basis points instead of 50 is because the Fed is data dependent. So it was sort of an opportunity for him to project to the markets that the Fed is data dependent. Remember, the Fed has lost their credibility amongst a lot of market participants because they always claim to be data dependent. But in the eyes of rising inflation over the past year, even as the evidence was getting higher and higher that inflation was getting stronger, the Federal Reserve still continued not to raise interest rates. And so they lost a lot of credibility in saying that they were data dependent. And so they gained a lot of that credibility back. But again, this came off as dovish for the markets, in part because in Jerome Powell saying that the Fed is going to remain data dependent, that means that if they see data where the economy is going to start to slow significantly, that they might reverse course and stop their inflation fight or stop raising rates as high as they are now in order to fight inflation. Now, today was the highest one-day rate hike that we got over the last 28 years. It's very rare that the Federal Reserve raises rates by any more than a quarter of a percent in one meeting, let alone 75 basis points. So this was a very, very big interest rate increase. Now, of course, you have to keep that in perspective, because even though we raise rates by 0.75% today, interest rates are still highly negative, and I'll get into that more in a minute. But we also got, as I mentioned, some economic data points got released this morning. Now, we got import prices month over month. There, we were expecting a 1.1% increase in import prices. We actually came under expectations. So import prices only increased this month by 0.6%. So that was a bit of a good data point for inflation numbers. Again, not as bad as anticipated. But again, that's still pretty bad. A 0.6% monthly increase in import prices still represents a 7.2% increase year over year. Again, these are prices for merchandise goods that Americans have to pay when they're buying stuff at retail locations. So it's still a significant increase for inflation. And even though it was under expectations, it has to be taken with a grain of salt, because again, the expectations were incredibly high to begin with. So just because we came in under expectations doesn't mean that it's a good economic data point. Although I will say it was better than anticipated. So it's at least a bit of good news there. Now, we also got retail sales month over month, and this should have been more telling. And I was sort of shocked that Powell didn't get this question in the press conference. But retail sales month over month actually declined for the first time in 5 months. We were expecting just a 0.1% increase, but instead we had a 0.3% decrease in retail sales month over month. Now, keep in mind, this is with consumers paying higher prices for everything that they're buying, yet the actual sales numbers decreased by 0.3%. So even though Americans are paying higher prices for goods and services, especially retail sales, the sales numbers are actually dropping. And again, why is that? Because you see that Americans are spending way too much on their necessities. Big part of that is the cost of housing is going up. And so there's a lot less disposable income for Americans to spend at retail locations. We also got the core retail sales number month over month, which strips out automobile sales. And that there we did get a 0.5% increase. So that is a bit telling with what's going on in the auto sector. And I'll go over that later. The last piece of economic data that we got was the Empire State Manufacturing Index. This measures the level of surveyed manufacturers within New York State, and this is something that people look to as a base for how productive the economy is with producing merchandise goods and manufactured materials. We were expecting a 2.4 increase. Instead, we got a 1.2 drop. So there, again, came in much lower than expectations. And we see that manufacturing continues to be extremely weak throughout the U.S. economy. Now, with all this data, right, especially with retail sales, you would think that the Federal Reserve would want to acknowledge that the economy is at least slowing down somewhat. But again, Powell said that he views the U.S. economy, along with the rest of the Federal Reserve, as an extremely strong economy, and that is showing no signs of slowing down. Now, there's two things that I knew he would reference in saying that to show that the economy is strong. But again, the Federal Reserve is cherry picking here the data points that they want to use. One, he brought up the fact that unemployment rates are still extremely low. Really, we're at almost full employment as measured by the unemployment rates of about 3.6%. But he mentioned that to show that the labor market is still doing well. If, you know, businesses are having no hard time finding workers. And when they do find workers, they're having to pay them more because labor conditions are so tight. So that's good for the overall worker. And is because unemployment is so low, the economy is supposedly doing very well. He also mentioned that consumers' balance sheets have never been healthier. And so that even though we have high inflation, the consumer in the middle and upper middle class is well equipped to be able to deal with that inflation. But he did mention that inflation is a big burden and the biggest burden on the lower income families in America. And it really hurts the people who can least afford it the most. But again, he ignores all the other data points. Again, extremely weak retail sales. The retail sales number, again, the retail sales fell even though the price of everything is higher, which means that Americans are really getting much less for their dollar and they just can't afford to buy anything. And with retail sales declining, again, that's bad news for a lot of the big box stores, the Targets, the Walmarts, Amazon, right? That's why all of the retail stocks are doing very poorly in this environment. And again, this is just signs that we're going to continue to see slowdowns. Now, we also see, again, consumer credit is up because people are spending more on their credit cards because they can't afford to make ends meet, right? We had a negative GDP print in the first quarter, and the Atlanta Fed is revising their estimates for Q2 GDP downwards. And so we're starting to see a lot of weakness in economic data. Again, I mentioned it last week, but the consumer sentiment index from the University of Michigan came out last week, and it was at its lowest level in, I believe, 45 years. Again, why are consumers pessimistic? Because everything they have to buy is going up. Their stock portfolio is coming down in value, right? The housing market's getting tight. It's getting even more and more difficult to try and find a home. And so you see that conditions are tightening, but really everyone is struggling to make ends meet. That is why everyone is so pessimistic on the economy. Now, my question for the Federal Reserve has to do with unemployment. Now, the Fed is going to continue to hike rates as little as they can to keep giving the impression that they are hawkish because they care about the market's reaction to what they do. Now, the Federal Reserve wants to say that they don't care about what the markets think they're doing, but that the Federal Reserve really does care. That's why they telegraph everything that they're going to do. That's why when it was decided 2 days ago that they were going to do 75 basis point rate hike as opposed to 50, they had to have it floated in the Wall Street Journal article to prepare the markets for that. But the point is that some Wall Street firms and some banks like JP Morgan were calling for a 100 basis point rate hike because they're saying that inflation is getting so out of control and that it's becoming an emergency that it really requires a 100 basis point rate hike or higher in order to really nip inflation in the bud. Now, again, the Federal Reserve could have done a 100 basis point rate hike because, as they mentioned, in the next few meetings, they're going to do 50 or 75 basis point rate hikes in the next few meetings. So if inflation really is an emergency, then they could just do 100 or 200 basis point rate hike today. And then if inflation starts to come down, they can always walk back those rate hikes later. But if inflation, again, is an emergency, then you would think they'd want to get ahead of it as much as they could to try and slow it down before it continues to be a much bigger problem. But again, like I said, they're going to raise rates as high as they can to seem hawkish, but in reality, they're very dovish. Again, everyone keeps saying the Fed is getting very hawkish here, but interest rates are still highly negative. They're still at all-time historic lows. And even if you look at the increase in producer prices that came out on Monday, I went over it in Monday's podcast, but producer prices increased by 10.8% year over year, but they increased by 1% for the month. Now, again, if you extrapolate that out and annualize it, a 1% increase in 1 month represents a 12% annualized increase in producer prices. Now, they only raised rates by, 75 basis points today, when last month, producer prices went up 1%. So in other words, we got the release of the producer price index on Monday of a 1% increase, and today they raised rates by 75 basis points, which means that interest rates are actually more negative right now after this interest rate hike than they were last week. Because again, they raised interest rates by 0.75%, but producer prices increased by 1% 2 days ago. So they're actually falling even further behind the inflation curve, and interest rates, even though they're rising in nominal terms, as I've been mentioning, they're actually declining in real terms. And so that means inflation is going to continue to get worse and worse. And again, the Federal Reserve is going to continue to hike rates just enough to make it seem like they're trying to fight inflation and giving the impression that they're trying to fight inflation. But in reality, they're trying to keep rates as low as they possibly can while maintaining that impression, because they know that they don't have the tools to fight inflation, because doing so is going to cause an economic disaster and a deep, deep recession. Now, the Federal Reserve, again, is going to continue to raise interest rates until unemployment rises more than they can tolerate. As long as unemployment levels stay low where they are at 3.6%, the Federal Reserve has cover and can stick to that in saying that the economy is strong and so it can handle higher interest rates. But remember, the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate, which is price stability and maximum employment. And employment and price stability work sort of as a lever, meaning that if you raise rates to stop inflation, then unemployment will rise. But if you lower rates to get unemployment levels higher or lower, then that means that inflation will probably run hotter. So because we have unemployment at full capacity, right, everyone is employed as far as the employment statistics are concerned, the Federal Reserve has leeway to then go and try and fight inflation. But for every time they raise interest rates, it's going to put more pressure on the labor market, and unemployment is going to continue to tick up. Now, with that, we got tons of different companies over the past few weeks announcing major layoffs and announcing hiring freezes. If you take a look at Compass and Redfin, which are two very big real estate brokers in the country, they announced this week that they're going to be laying off 20% of their workforce because they are projecting years of fewer home sales in the future. And part of that, again, is because a lot of people have fixed rate mortgages that are locked in at 3, 4%, 5%. And with mortgage rates now rising and above 6% nationally, a lot of people that have a low fixed rate mortgage, especially at 3 or 4%, that's almost like an asset to them, because if you sell your house and you don't have enough equity to roll over into a new house without taking out a mortgage, you don't get to keep your mortgage rate, right? So if you have a 3% 30-year fixed mortgage rate and you sell your home and move somewhere else, when you take out your mortgage on that next house, you're going to be taking it out at the current rate of about 6%. Which means that your monthly mortgage payments will be much higher to live in the same house that your same type of house you're living in now. And so for that reason, again, home sales are going to continue to drop as we move into the next couple of years. So Compass and Redfin laying 20% of their workforce off. Coinbase is laying off 18% of their workforce. BlockFi laying off 20% of their workforce. Gemini laying off 10% of their workforce. These are all fintech companies in the crypto space, right? You have Electric Mile, which just announced that they're going to be filing for bankruptcy the other day, going out of business. So all their workers are going to get laid off. Robinhood doing layoffs this year, PayPal, right? But we're starting to see a lot of layoffs coming in in the crypto industry, the fintech industry, the tech industry in general, and in the housing sector. So these are all going to affect the unemployment rate, but they haven't showed up in the unemployment rates yet because the last data that we got in unemployment rates didn't account for all these layoffs. So again, as I mentioned before, unemployment can tick up very quickly, and the Federal Reserve is only going to raise rates until the unemployment levels get to a level which they think they can't tolerate anymore. And so once we start to see unemployment go to 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%, and keep going, then the Federal Reserve is going to be pressured more and more to then go on its pivot and stop its rate hikes and stop its fight against inflation. Now, Jerome Powell also did not really address the balance sheet reduction. The Fed's balance sheet has not shrunken any since they supposedly started doing quantitative tightening. So they still have tons of treasury bonds that they need to get sold into the market. And I don't want to cover the bond market too much here because I know I cover it a lot, but it's very important. The last 2 days of trading have been very, very weak for bonds. The bond yields are spiking and bonds are trading with very, very high levels of volatility. You're starting to see there's a lot of illiquidity in the bond market. And there's a big problem because yields are starting to spike and you see a lot of pressure. A lot of people are not wanting to buy bonds here. And so that's hurting the Federal Reserve's ability to be able to start to shrink its balance sheet. Because again, the Federal Reserve is the biggest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds in the world. And they own about 29% of the entire U.S. Treasury market alone. The Federal Reserve owns about 29% of all government-issued debt. Now, the next biggest holders are foreign governments, which hold about 22% of the Treasury market. Mutual funds own about 11.5% of the Treasury market. And then depository institutions, state and local governments, and pension funds own the rest. But again, the Federal Reserve owns 30% of the entire U.S. Treasuries in existence. So if they have to start selling them, then bond prices are going to come way down, and that's going to force bond yields, bond interest rates to go much, much higher. And again, the higher bond rates go, the lower stock prices will come, all else being equal. And so that's going to be a big problem for them. Aside from raising interest rates, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to start shrinking their balance sheet and shrinking the money supply to try and curb inflation. But anyway, I don't really want to cover bonds too much today. Again, yesterday was one of the most horrific trading days we've had in the bond market over the entire history of the United States, quite frankly. But the point is that Powell wants the Fed to get interest rates back to neutral. Now, a neutral level of interest rates would be defined as a level of interest that is neither contributing to inflation nor contributing to changing employment levels. So that's where they really want the interest rate to be. Now, again, that would be a moving target because the Fed has a dual mandate to maximize employment and promote price stability. But the thing is why would we even want interest rates to get back to neutral? Because if you think about it, again, inflation is supposedly, and it's not just supposedly, but in the Fed's eyes, inflation is an emergency. So if inflation is an emergency, again, you would think they would have some sort of sense of urgency to get interest rates up high enough to actually slow down inflation right away, right? In order for the Fed to actually start getting inflation to come down right now, they would actually have to raise interest rates 100 basis points, 200 basis points, 300 basis points, not by the end of the year, but right now. They would have to jam up the credit markets so that there's less credit available in the economy for people to continue to spend. As I keep mentioning, credit card debt and consumer debt in general keeps rising substantially every single month, which means that demand destruction is not happening because credit conditions are not loose enough. If the Fed wants to change the demand in the economy to get pricing to come down, they have to jam up the credit markets enough in order to get people to stop borrowing money, to get businesses to stop borrowing money. Now, is that going to cause a lot of short-term pain? Yes, of course it will. But that's what you need in order to stop inflation. We've printed all this money over the past several years, and now all those chickens are coming home to roost. If you want to stop the pain of inflation, you need to take drastic measures. Just like when the Fed wanted to stop a depression when the pandemic first started and we had the lockdowns, what did it take to do that? It took drastic measures of money printing, and they dropped interest rates to zero immediately, right? When the pandemic first hit, the Federal Reserve dropped interest rates to zero immediately. They didn't do it over the course of several months like they're doing right now with raising rates to supposedly get rid of this inflation emergency. So that should show you the mindset that they have on fighting inflation. Again, it's very important to understand the Federal Reserve will continue to raise rates to just enough, but not more, just to make sure that they are giving the impression they're trying to fight inflation, but their actual intent is not fighting inflation. And again, the question investors need to be asking themselves is what happens if unemployment starts to go up, which it will, because again, all these companies are starting to announce layoffs, and the Walmarts, the Amazons, the Targets of the world are going to start announcing layoffs very soon as well because of the slowdown in retail sales. When unemployment gets to 4%, to 5%, to 6%, is the Federal Reserve still going to be committed to 50 basis point rate hikes, 75 basis point rate hikes, to shrinking their balance sheet and getting interest rates to go even higher? No, I doubt it. And if they do, then they would already be trying to raise interest rates again by 100 basis points or 150 basis points now. The reality is the Federal Reserve understands what raising interest rates very high was going to do. And that's why, again, they're not raising them high enough to fight inflation. They're just raising them high enough to give the impression that they're trying to fight inflation. But inflation is not going to come down anytime soon. Now, I was watching an interview today after the press conference for the Federal Reserve on CNBC with Jeff Gundlach. And Jeff Gundlach brought up a very important point that everyone knows the CPI is bogus, right? We all know that the CPI is designed to understate inflation. Yet for some reason, all investors look to the CPI to try and determine where interest rates are and how much inflation is in the economy. And everyone uses the CPI in making asset allocation decisions within their portfolio and on their clients' behalf and their clients' portfolios. So it's like we all know that the CPI is a fake number, but we all use it because we know that the other guy is supposed to be using it. And so everyone's just sort of trusting the CPI. But he said, let's do an experiment, because the CPI used to be much different in the 1970s, and it used to measure inflation much more honestly. But he said, let's take the methodology for computing the CPI today and use that to recreate the CPI in 1980. So in other words, instead of using what the CPI said inflation was in 1980, let's take today's consumer price index and apply that to the 1980s and see where inflation would have been measured at had we been using today's CPI in the 1980s. So in 1980, the official inflation rate as measured by the consumer price index was 13.5%. Now, if we used today's CPI to measure inflation in the 1980s, today's CPI measures inflation in 1980 at 9%. So in other words, the CPI today is understating the inflation we had in 1980 by 4.5%, which is it's about 50% less than what inflation actually was in 1980. So if you use that methodology for now, it stands to reason if you use the 1980 CPI to measure inflation today, instead of inflation measuring at 18.6%, it would measure at 17.2%. So the real inflation rate, if we use the CPI of 1980, just from doing that experiment right there, means that the real inflation rate today is 17.2%. So that means with the Fed funds rate at 1.5 to 1.75%, we have real interest rates of about negative 16%. Now, why would inflation go down if interest rates are at negative 16%? Because again, you're not going to get demand destruction by having interest rates at negative 16%. People are still going to be able to take out tons of credit card debt, still be able to take out auto loans. They're still going to be able to take out personal loans. They're still going to be able to borrow money out of their house, right? You have to get interest rates high enough to where people can't borrow money anymore to the extent that they're borrowing it now. And still you have tons of people are able to open up credit cards with tons of different lenders. Tons of different banks are offering credit cards, right, with very loose terms. Why? Because, again, interest rates are still extremely low. And, you know, it's very important to understand, too, that when we, you know, when we're talking about inflation, when we see prices going up as high as they are, again, you know, food's up probably 10, 15% this year. Oil prices are skyrocketing. You have, you know, all materials prices are going up. Restaurant prices are going up. If you book a hotel room or a flight, it's extremely expensive. So again, what happens when people see that? They begin to start worrying about prices and they start to stock up on goods that they can buy ahead of time. We saw this during the pandemic when people were worried that there were shortages of toilet paper, paper towels, hand sanitizer, bleach, things like that. What did they do? They went out and bought more than they needed to try and stock up. Same thing with meat, all sorts of different food that you could freeze or different canned goods. That is what people are going to do because that is the inflationary mindset. And so it sort of feeds on itself because if people are worried that prices are going up in the future and that there's going to be shortages, they go out and buy more than they would otherwise. And that further exacerbates the shortage of supply we have, which means that prices go up even further after people go out and buy those products. But again, Jerome Powell said in the press conference today that he sees no difference in consumer behavior because of the inflationary pressures. And I couldn't believe he actually said that because, you know, this is a lot different in a lot of ways than the last recession we had. And I don't count COVID as a recession because it was over in basically 10 minutes because we flooded the economy with trillions of dollars. But if you go back to 2008, if you weren't flipping houses in 2008, if you didn't own a home and four vacation homes, right? If you didn't work in the real estate sector, you really didn't feel the recession too badly. Now, yeah, some people did feel it badly. I mean, restaurant owners had a very tough time, right? People that had owned businesses in discretionary areas had a tough time. But remember, there were tons of bailouts in 2008. And if you were a normal person working a normal job in the economy, and again, you weren't flipping houses or you didn't own five vacation homes, you didn't really feel the brunt of the pandemic or sorry, of the housing crisis. Because it really didn't hit Main Street that bad. It was really just the financial markets that took it on the chin. And again, the financial markets got bailed out anyway. But you know, when you go around in today's economy, everybody is experiencing inflation. It's all everyone's talking about. When anytime I'm at some sort of family event or I'm hanging out with someone or I'm at a public place and people are having a conversation, everyone's talking about inflation. Everyone's also talking about the bear market in stocks. Everyone knows that stock prices are coming down, right? It's all over the news. That's all anyone's talking about. And, you know, everyone is feeling the squeeze in the economy. And so for Jerome Powell to say that consumers are not changing their behavior yet because of inflation is a complete lie. And again, it's a complete lie because he's mentioned in past press conferences that if the Federal Reserve noticed the consumer changing their behavior because of inflation, that they were going to actually start to do something about it because he knows that when people start to act in their daily lives like there's going to be more inflation, it actually further exacerbates the inflation problem. But again, he's just completely lying here, because all the data is showing that consumers are changing their behavior. Again, why are people not buying the high margin items in Target? Because they can't afford them, right? They're spending too much money on food, too much money on gas, too much money on rent or their mortgage, right? So you're starting to see consumer behavior is shifting. And that's why we also saw in the core retail sales, with the retail sales stripping out automobiles, that the sales increase month over month, stripping out automobiles. Why are Americans not buying automobiles? Because they can't afford to buy new cars. They don't have enough money left over to be able to afford them. And those that are still buying new cars are buying them on debt. Now, that brings me to Ford mentioned today that they actually have higher default rates on auto loans than anticipated. And so that's also starting to show that the consumer is extremely weak. Why are people defaulting on their auto loans? Well, because they're spending, again, too much money on everything else they need to buy, that they don't have enough disposable income left over to make their auto loans, to make the auto payments every month. So this is going to be something that's going to continue to flood into the rest of the economy. Again, we have all these buy now, pay later stocks, the Affirms, Upstart Holdings, Cash App, PayPal, all these companies are going to start to experience higher loan defaults. Visa, MasterCard, American Express, they're all going to start to experience higher defaults on their loans, especially as unemployment rises, because Americans just simply don't have enough money left over to pay out all these loans. So, you know, there's a lot of complacency here in this credit bubble that we have. Again, there's record high debt levels in every sector of the economy, in autos, homes, student loans, credit cards, corporate debt, government debt, state and local government debt. And there's just so much complacency all over the place. It reminds me so much of 2008, where everyone was completely oblivious to what was going on in the housing sector. And if you just took the time to look, you could have seen it very easily. Well, if you just take the time to look at the credit bubble that we have now, again, credit card debt is skyrocketing every single month. Defaults are starting to pick up, and credit standards have been so loose for so long because the Fed has kept interest rates at zero for over a decade, that once interest rates rise, everyone has way too much debt in order for people to be able to afford to pay their debt back in a higher interest rate environment, which is, again, why the bank stocks are going down, because people are going to have to start pricing in higher default rates for banks, for auto companies, for mortgage companies. And so there's so many loans that have been made that are not going to get collected on. And also there's a lot less loans that are going to be made in the future, because sales are going to decline dramatically because so many sales have been pulled forward. Like the auto industry, so many of the cars that have been sold in the past decade have been sold on 5-6 year loans, because people can't afford to buy cars without taking more than 5 or 6 years to pay those cars off. Now, if you're taking out a 6 year auto loan, you're probably buying a car that you can't afford. So that means that if you can't take that 6 year loan out anymore because credit conditions tighten, you can't buy a new car. So a lot of the car sales that have already happened over the past decade pulled car sales forward from the next several years, which means, again, a lot of the sales in the auto industry, in the retail space, are not going to happen over the next couple of years as we head into recession and as interest rates go higher. Now, with that, I want to wrap up by making an important point that I recognize today. Now, I was looking at some data that was over the past 12 months for some performance of market sectors. Now, over the past 12 months, the S&P 500 is down 10%, but bonds are actually down 12% over the past 12 months. So to the extent you've owned bonds instead of stocks because you were seeking safety from stocks, you're actually doing much worse. Again, people who own bonds are the more risk-averse investors who are looking for safer investments that are not going to get hurt as bad as stocks in a downturn. But here you're seeing in the past 12 months, bonds are actually doing worse than stocks. And again, stocks are still very cheap relative to bonds. Now, stocks in the US are very expensive, but relative to bonds, they're very cheap because bonds have been on such a bull market. Because again, the Federal Reserve has been buying 30% of all the bonds in the market. And so they've been fixing the bond prices to be much higher than they otherwise would be had they been purchased by investors in the market rather than the Federal Reserve. Now, housing is up 20% over the past 12 months. Gold is down 4%. Bitcoin is down 41%. And the US dollar is up 15%. Now, again, the dollar sold off a little bit today after the markets took Powell as coming off as dovish. But the dollar has just gone on a huge run, up 15% over the past 12 months. That is a huge increase for a currency, especially in an environment where we have inflation as high as it is. Now, yes, inflation is a problem all around the world. So when we say the US dollar went up 15% over the past 12 months, that's only in relativity to other major fiat currencies. But in reality, the value of the dollar is going way down because the purchasing power of the dollar is going way down. And that is why so many Americans are pessimistic about the economy. The other point I want to make is if you look at the credit yield spreads, I'm looking at the 1 month yield, the 1 year treasury bill, the 2 year, the 10 year, and the 30 year. Now, you're getting paid 2.98% to lend money to the government for 1 year. You're getting paid 3.25% to loan money to the government for 2 years. Now, to loan money to the government for 30 years, you're getting paid 3.35%. So instead of getting it paid, so if you loan money to the government for 2 years, you're going to collect 3.25% interest. But if you make the government a 30-year loan, you're only going to get paid 3.35% interest. So why would anybody in those conditions make a 30-year loan when you're locking your money up for 15 times the amount of time to get paid just 0.1% more interest? Anybody with a brain would not do that. So why is it that rates are so tight between the 2 year and the 30 year? Well, again, it's because the Federal Reserve is fixing the bond market, right? They own tons of bonds, which is keeping bond interest rates artificially suppressed. And so that is distorting the entire bond market. When the Federal Reserve eventually sells these bonds back into the market, if they even do it, I'm not even convinced they're going to do it. I'm not convinced they're going to shrink their balance sheet. But if they eventually sell those bonds into the market, long-term interest rates are going to skyrocket. Because again, if you're going to buy a 30-year treasury bond, you have to expect that inflation expectations are going to come down. As we see over the next couple months, that these tiny rate hikes don't do anything to bring inflation down, people are going to recognize that they were going to have much longer, higher inflation over the long term. And so they're going to have to start pricing higher inflation over the long term into the 30-year bond, which means that interest rates on the 30-year bond are going much higher. But again, there's no reason to own any bonds here because they all are paying less interest than the actual inflation rate. So even though you're getting interest on your bonds, you're getting paid back with money that has much less purchasing power than when you loaned it out. Again, if you loan money to the government, you buy a 2-year treasury, and you get paid 3.2% interest on that 2-year note, inflation is still 8.6%, which means that you're getting a real rate of return of negative 5.8%. And that's assuming inflation doesn't go higher from here. But again, there's no reason to expect that inflation is not going to go higher from here. As I mentioned, the Fed raised rates today by 0.75%, but producer prices increased last month by 1%. So interest rates are 0.25% more negative today than they were last month. So as the Fed continues to raise interest rates nominally, interest rates in real terms accounting for inflation are falling. So again, the CPI doesn't even measure inflation properly. I'm saying this assuming that inflation is 8.6%. Again, if we used the 1980 CPI to measure prices, then we would be closer to 17.2% inflation, which implies real yields of negative 15%, which is an all-time historic low. So the bond market, again, is a ticking time bomb that blew up yesterday. Yields skyrocketed, but again, skyrocketing in quotes because they only went up on the 10-year note by 0.4%, which is basically nothing. Wait until investors see them go up 3%, 4%, 5% in a matter of weeks when the Fed or foreign holders of bonds start selling them and dumping them onto the market, and when inflation really starts to run out of control, and when people don't want to hold U.S. dollars anymore or hold notes to get paid U.S. dollars in the future. Now, the last point I want to make before I wrap up, out of 2,700 ETFs over the past 12 months, only 6% of all those ETFs have returned more than the CPI. So the CPI being 8.6%, only 6% of 2,700 different ETFs have beaten the CPI over the past 12 months. Think about that. So you see that as Americans are struggling to pay more for food, for energy, for rent, for utilities, for insurance, for clothes, for electronics, for everything they need to buy, their stock portfolios are way underperforming inflation. And of the 6% of ETFs that actually overperformed the CPI, what ETFs were they? Mostly, they were commodity ETFs. Now, one of the ETFs in particular that I want to mention is ticker symbol COWZ, cows, the cash cows ETF. Now, this is an ETF that focuses highly on companies that are cash flowing, very positive, have a strong record for producing cash flows. And a lot of the companies in this ETF are oil companies. And that's why the ETF has performed so well over the past year. Now, we have had a sharp decline in oil over the past day or so because of the Fed rate decision. Oil prices, as I'm looking now, are at about $114 per barrel, down from about $119 per barrel, or even I think we got as high as $122 per barrel just last week. So this is a good pullback here, a good opportunity if you don't have exposure to energy stocks to get exposure in your portfolio. Again, I think the oil markets have a lot longer to run here. This is not an investment recommendation, but it's just a thought. I'm going to be adding this into my portfolio holdings as well. Again, the cows ETF is down on the week 9%. So it's a good opportunity to buy here on the dip. Again, a lot of the big holdings are either oil companies, healthcare companies, but they focus more on cash flow. It's only trading at 9.7 times earnings, and it has a 30-day yield of 1.7%. So this is good buying here, in my opinion. Again, not an investment recommendation, but just something to consider, maybe put in your portfolios if you want to get exposure to energy in a more diversified way. But this is one of the 6% of 2,700 ETFs that have outperformed inflation over the past 12 months. And again, I expect that trend to continue. Now, with that, I'm going to leave off from there, but I'll probably be back on Saturday. I'm not sure. But again, the Fed is only going to continue to give the impression of fighting inflation, not actually fighting inflation. And they're only going to do so until unemployment becomes a big problem, which is going to start happening in the next few months. And again, interest rates being at a real negative rate, especially as high as they are now, as far as negative terms go, is not going to slow down inflation. In fact, inflation is likely to accelerate. Now, we may get a slowdown over the next month or two in the CPI just because it's due for a slowdown because it's been so high lately. But I wouldn't be surprised if the CPI continues to accelerate over the next month or two. But nonetheless, even if it cools down over the next month or two, the CPI is going to continue to accelerate much faster as we get into the fall months and the winter months later in the year. So inflation is going to continue to rise, and we're going to have to see what the Fed is going to do next. But again, if you are strategizing months in advance, like you should be, you can't look at what the Federal Reserve is doing now. You have to look to what's going to happen when unemployment starts to rise and the Fed's hand is forced to either choose the labor market or price stability.